This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on the coming show is not necessarily those of the regents of the University of California, nor the management of KUCI. Coming up, Subversity with Dan Zhang. Today we're going to talk about a new paper that's starting out in Orange County, providing a progressive and community forum for people on the coast of Orange County. And so stay tuned. This is Dan Zhang here with Subversity here on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. With us is John Earl, who's a former host here, a host of a public affairs show called News Gap. But he's in a new kind of permutation right now. He's attempting to start a new community paper in Orange County. Welcome, John.
Thank you.
John, you already have a website, OC Organizer, OrangeCountyOrganizer.com. Why do you want to start a publication in paper? Why not just do it online?
Well, it's OCOrganizer.com.
Sorry.
this is a different kind of publication that we're starting. It's called the Orange Coast Voice. And the website for that is ocvoice.com. It's not, there's not much on it right now, but the paper will come out on September 1st, and it will serve the communities of Huntington Beach and Costa Mesa, and will deal with local issues, but also it'll attempt to show the relationship between issues that are important outside of cities that are traditionally taken care of politically outside of cities to local areas. For example, we'll be talking about we have an article or an interview coming up that deals with the energy crisis and peak oil, and it relates that to what's going on in Huntington Beach and in our county here. So we'll also have stories on the immigration policies of the Costa Mesa City Council, and of course we all know the implications of that issue outside of Costa Mesa.
I just want to welcome the two interns here, Steve and Keith, who are also sitting in on this show. And they are in training to be DJs here at KUCI. Every year we have a program, every quarter, I suppose, almost every quarter, have a program of training new DJs here and show hosts. You cover Costa Mesa because it is becoming the epicenter of immigration struggles.
Well, it was the epicenter. I'm not sure it's now where the epicenter is, but it's kind of everywhere. Uh-huh. But Mayor Mansoor proposed using the police to help enforce immigration law, and the city council majority passed a proposal to do that, to enter into an agreement with the immigration customs enforcement agency of the Homeland Security Department. That hasn't actually taken place yet, but they've already voted to provide funding for a program that may not ever exist, but they're ready to go, psychological implications of that have already hit the city in terms of loss of business and what have you. So that's what's going on there.
What evidence do you have for that, loss of business?
Well, that's what the business owners claim. The Chamber of Commerce is opposed to the immigration, the merging of police and immigration authorities or duties, and local businesses who owners who I've spoken to, and it's been reported in the press, have reported a loss of business as much as 30% since about 5 or 6 months ago.
Your paper, your new paper, you said is going to be distributed in two areas, but not Santa Ana?
No, it won't be in Santa Ana.
How come?
Well, you can only cover so much of the world, as you know, here at KUCI. So we have about 20,000 copies we'll be printing, and we need to, in order to make it more effective, we want to focus on a more concentrated area. So perhaps eventually we can expand beyond that.
Because I was thinking the county offices are there, and it will be important to cover the Board of Supervisors.
Well, we'll be covering very much the Board of Supervisors, or the supervisor who serves Huntington Beach, and Jim Silva and so on, or where he's going somewhere else, I guess. But we'll be covering the Board of Supervisors as our congressmen, all of our elected officials that serve that area.
Because the sheriff is, trying to enforce immigration also, and it is actually at odds with his own advisory committee. There's a kind of ethnic and others, I guess, people of color coalition that is serving as his advisors, and they've kind of come out when a couple of guests were on my show earlier, this show, had said they were going to oppose his plan to, to do the same stuff that Mansour was doing.
Right. Well, the county is supposedly the model for Costa Mesa, and the kind of funding that an agreement that the county would enter into would supposedly be the model for Costa Mesa. But the mayor recently said, well, whether we get funding for the training of our police officers or not, we want to go ahead. He wants to go ahead with this program. So it's really up in the air whether there'll be funding for the training available. It would cost probably well over $1 million. It's several hundred thousand dollars a year, and plus other things, redoing contract negotiations and other things with the police union and what have you. So there's some great costs here aside from the social costs. And the mayor wants to go ahead regardless of whether there's and fund this program, pre-funded, I guess. I guess it's one of the few pre-funded programs by this mayor who is opposed to funding social services and that kind of thing.
When I sent out the notice about the show, I called this an alternative paper. Is it really going to be an alternative paper?
Well, those were your words. It will be alternative paper. It's not going to be distributed throughout the county.
Okay.
It will be an alternative in the sense that we're the kind of coverage we're going to give, but we are going to serve the community and be a voice for everyone in the community. So although we are progressive, myself and my co-publisher, Dwayne Roberts, and we have a very good group of writers helping us out, but our intention is to give a voice to everyone in the community.
How about the, that's kind of...
Even the mayor.
Is that a platitude? I mean, is that kind of...
No, it's not a platitude. It's what we really believe. You can't really be a successful community newspaper if you ignore a large section of the community. So you need to give a voice to everyone in order, not just for good business, but in order to be fair. And also it's part of our philosophy to examine all the issues and let people come to their own conclusion. We happen to be progressive, and our editorial content or opinion content will reflect that, but we still have to recognize that we're not the only ones in the community. We're not, we need to listen as much as we want people to listen to us.
How do you see the coverage right now of the media in those areas?
Well, sometimes it's good, but I think that there's a lack of depth. There's a lack of willingness to go in depth into issues that are touchy. For example, the issue that I've been writing about on the OC Organizer website, the connection between the mayor and extremist elements, such as the Minuteman Project, and a reluctance to look into that organization and depict it for what it actually is. It is an extremist organization with very solid racist undertones. And that issue is hardly touched at all in the Register, the Times, the Daily Pilot, which is owned by the Tribune Times Company. And I've been reporting on the connections also with the mayor and several two other council members and a man they appointed who has very arguably neo-Nazi views. I don't think there's any other way to put it. And why they appointed this person and going into that and how it relates to immigration issues and so on. That's something that, for the most part, is just completely ignored by the Daily Pilot. Not totally. They have had some press coverage of that in the past. And one of their former reporters, writing in La Opinion and writing for the OC Organizer website, was talking about this issue. But for the most part, they've ignored it.
Who's that?
The person they pointed out.
No, I mean, who's... No, it's, well, you can say that, but also the who's the reporter, I mean.
Well, I don't, it's any reporter. Oh, the reporter who wrote about it? Oh, yeah. Umberto Caspa. Umberto Caspa, yeah.
See, the, also they don't, they haven't covered what you've covered is the history of the kind of anti-immigrant, anti-Mexican history in Santa Ana and the, what do you call the orange?
The citrus strikes. Yeah, we reported on that more than a year ago, and in an interview with Dr. Gilbert Gonzalez, who teaches here at UCI, but also in a separate article, based in part on his research, and also going through old Orange County Register and other newspaper accounts of the strikes in the 30s here, and of course he's done just a tremendous amount of research on that, and we'll certainly employ that in our reporting in the future because it relates to what's going on today there.
Right. Yeah, and he's been on this show also. Then I think it was called the Santa Ana Bulletin, right?
There were a number of papers.
Yeah, I mean, the then. Register was called that then.
Yeah. No, it was called, I don't know, what there was a predecessor to it, I guess, right, but right. There are all kinds of papers around here.
Then. Yeah, you have a cover from that paper.
That was called the Santa Ana Register, and
Register,
the headline was Shoot to Kill,
right?
About the sheriff's response to these citrus workers who were going on strike here in 1936.
So how often would your paper come out on the Orange Coast Voice?
Orange Coast Voice will come out at first on a monthly basis, and then we hope to go biweekly within about 6 months. That's an estimate. You know, we're going to need some time to get our balance and what have you. And I'm sure we're going to encounter problems that we don't foresee right now. So we'll have, you know, that'll take some time.
Does the would your coverage, you know, given that it's once a month, how do you think that would affect your writing? I mean, would it be more, not as current?
Well, actually, it gives us an advantage actually because we get to read the other papers and see what they've left out, and we'll put that in. And so that's and eventually we'll go biweekly, but we also will have a website. Not at first, but we'll get that going within a few months, and that will help to fill in that gap there a little bit. But actually, gives us an advantage, I think, and it tends to force us to go into more depth on issues. If you're monthly, you know, you've got to have something that the weekly or biweekly wouldn't have, or the daily. So we'll tend to, our focus will be on whatever we focus on. It'll be more in depth than what you'll see.
So it'd be more analysis.
There'd be more facts in the articles. One thing I learned in writing for local papers before is that people actually want a lot of facts and details about what's going on in their local community. And that's contrary to the style of reporting that you see in most of the papers today, where it's just, you know, things are brushed over and style is... comes over substance. We want to have style and substance. We want to combine the two. And so I think that'll work out fine. But we do want to go biweekly. I don't know about weekly, but we'll see how that goes. You know, that takes a tremendous amount of resources and what have you. So,
case in point would be the Register is coming up with a new paper also called the Orange Coast, Orange County Post. It's a digest of the Register.
Well, what's to digest? I don't know what's to digest. It's kind of hard to digest what they have already, I guess. But you know, that'll be fun to see that.
It'll be like the Irvine World News. They'll give it away free, and then in areas that houses that don't households that don't subscribe to the Register.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, they have Squeeze. What is it called? OC Squeeze or something. Is that,
It's a kind of a bar guide, I guess.
Something
I would call
like
it a bar guide.
Something like that, yeah.
It's like the events guide and a few kind of
I mean, we need something more than that in this county. There's so much to write about here. There's so many angles and so many subjects that you can talk about, and almost everything that's happening at the local level has so much more depth in it than what you see in the papers. Although, you know, occasionally, I mean, you have to give credit occasionally. There's some awesome reporting in the press that we have. The LA Times recently had a series just last week on the pollution of the ocean around the world, and I think that was an outstanding series. But that's the kind of thing we'll be talking about right here because of Huntington Beach, the ocean, but we'll be talking about the local and international implications of things like that.
And yesterday they did a whole in-depth piece on war crimes in Vietnam during the Vietnam War based on a guy who did his PhD looking at archival papers and that the Pentagon had released.
Right, and we'll be touching on that kind of subject. We have a writer who right now is researching the reaction of the Orange County Muslim community to immigration issues and the Patriot Act and this kind of thing, and so we'll be going into that too, but with a local focus on those issues, because we need to show how issues like war affect us locally here.
Right.
You know, we're spending billions of dollars in a war in Iraq, and our local officials act as if that has nothing to do with the way they govern the city. Well, it has a lot to do with it because of all the money that's sucking away, for one thing, the destruction of the environment. All these things come back to us locally. But we will have that local focus on that to try to show. Plus, we'll be covering the traditional issues that are also very important to people, like potholes and disputes over zoning and of course, redevelopment issues, which I've been very involved with in the past, just as a journalist and as a labor organizer. So we'll be talking all these issues that seem very, very local as well and that are intimate to the community.
Some people might think this was just a front for the Green Party.
Why would they think that?
Because you're active in the Green Party, I mean.
Well,
and you were wearing a Green Party T-shirt.
Well, I guess the Register is a front for the what party? The neo-fascist libertarian part of the Libertarian Party or something, and the Times is a front for corporate Democrats, but we want to be a front for the ordinary person in Costa Mesa and Huntington Beach and you know everywhere else.
How about you haven't mentioned the alternative, so-called alternative paper in Orange County.
Which one is that?
The OC Weekly.
Yeah.
How have they covered communities, you think?
Well, they do some good reporting. They do some good reporting, but then they do some reporting that I strongly disagree with. They do great entertainment reporting. And, it's a different kind of paper. I don't think you really compare the two. There would be some overlapping for sure, but
in terms of
they have progressive concerns and what have you, but they also have a different style than we'll have. But it's also a different genre of newspaper.
But would you call the Ask the Mexican a progressive column?
I wouldn't, but others think it's wonderful. The Minutemen think it's wonderful.
Right.
The right wing radio talk show hosts think it's wonderful. And I know a lot of, quote, liberals, unquote, who think it's wonderful, too. I don't know. I think you can debate that. I don't think the author is racist because he writes that, but it seems to me that it's kind of catering to that. Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to evaluate that, to know the exact effect of that and everything, you know. And I certainly don't want to say that somebody doesn't have a right to express themselves in their form of satire or what have you. You satire is hit and miss, you know. So
depends on the audience. Sorry.
Yeah, Ask a Mexican isn't the column that is my concern. there's much more to worry about with local press than that. You know,
it's the one that's gotten the most publicity and mainstream coverage.
It's kind of a silly diversion from, I think it has some serious implications, but not enough to warrant so much time and coverage. That I think that writer gets more coverage, publicity for that column than for other issues that the paper might be writing about or that any paper should be writing about.
I only ask because in Costa Mesa, there's a huge Latino community and you'll be covering that a lot.
That's right. We'll be reaching out to the Latino community, too. We'll be distributing in their area. We're also considering, we haven't decided exactly how we're going to go about it, but we're considering a smaller supplement or Spanish summary version of what's in our paper as well.
A digest.
Maybe a digest, but it's hard to know exactly how to go about this. We're studying that right now.
Oh, yeah.
We have, costs are a real concern with us because we're a startup situation. We're a very grassroots group. we don't have corporate backing. You know, we don't have a national media company behind us, nor do we want that.
Have you gotten money from politicians?
No, we're not. We haven't gotten any money from politicians. Do you know any? No, I'm just kidding. No, we haven't done that. We're going to sell advertising. We'll ask for donations. We'll ask for volunteer help. We have volunteers who will help us to distribute the paper. We're going to distribute the paper as much as possible door to door, you know, right up on the doorstep. And also we'll be putting in traditional places where you might find other newspapers, you know, in the, maybe, a, I don't know, I don't want to advertise the name but in at this point, but until they put our paper in there anyways. But in, you know, various, you know, coffee shops, what have you, restaurants, that kind of thing.
But you wouldn't have racks, right?
So yeah, we'll have some racks.
You would have some
racks. Yeah, we'll have some racks, yeah.
That's a tough
maybe
thing.
Not exactly, yeah. I mean, not in the first month or two, but we are looking into that, yeah.
The when the OC Weekly started, I had the publisher on before he started.
And yeah.
He made all these promises or expectations of how the paper would be.
Yeah.
And how we would reach in all these ethnic groups and how his staff would be so diverse.
Right.
What is your staff like?
Well, our staff is diverse. We have an immigrant woman who will be writing about her experiences working in local hotels. We have I don't want to stereotype anybody. I mean, we have a writer who has experience writing on lesbian gay issues. But she also is very capable and will be writing on development issues and other issues as well. We have a woman who will be writing on environmental issues and covering water board issues. And so, and we're still interviewing people who have applied. We got a very wonderful response. I got over, 25 or 30 people who want to write for the paper. So I'm still going through. We're not done acquiring our staff by any means, and it'll be an ongoing process too. This isn't a paper where somebody's going to write for it and get rich or even pay their rent right now. It's a paper that although we have professional writers with a lot of professional experience who have come to us and want to write
for free,
for free or almost for free, I would say in essence for free or expenses. And they do so because they want to be able to do what a journalist should be able to do.
So they feel that they will have more freedom.
Have more freedom. You know, they won't be boxed in as much as they would where they might be presently working.
So you're saying some of them have mainstream experience?
Some of them do, yeah, yeah.
Do you see the coverage of, in terms of those two cities in the Register, which one covers it better, you would say? Of which one, LA Times versus the Register?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't say either covers it better. There's some, sometimes the Times will have an article that the Register doesn't have and vice versa, you know.
Do they play catch-up with each other sometimes?
I don't know if they play catch-up. I think they each have a certain policy and they stick to that, and I think the main policy is to get money, is to get advertisers and get money, and that may not necessarily be the desire of the reporters, but they're boxed into that. And I think that's what motivates the style and approach of the Register and the Times more than anything else. It's money. I mean, you see all the cutbacks in staff, the cutbacks in the amount of news, downsizing the size of the paper. You know, everything is downsizing. The intellectual aspect is downsized. Everything is downsized. So it's all economically driven, and we have to be economically driven to some extent too, or we're not going to survive. And we hope to make a viable business out of this. We're not just doing it, you know, to be honest, just because we care about the community. But that's a large part of it. We're doing it this way because we care about the community, you know. So we have certain standards we want to adhere to. I think a lot of the news coverage, unfortunately, is purely economically driven, you know.
They did cut the metropolitan, you know, what do you call the community coverage? They had these pages that focused on community, and also, they basically shifted to L.A. Now there isn't really much Orange County edition. It's mostly...
And you're talking about the Times.
Yeah, it's mostly you know, Los Angeles paper at this point. I mean, it's the focus seems to be from Los Angeles.
Or California, Southern California.
Because of the.
But that's not our competitor. Focus. That's not really our competitor. I mean, I think we're going to be. We'll have a kind of unique niche market here, probably. I don't even think. I think just to more. If we have a competitor, it'll probably be more likely the Huntington Beach Independent, which is not independent, of course. It's owned by the Tribune Company that owns the Daily Pilot in Costa Mesa.
Oh.
So we'll be the only. Actually, I think we'll be one of the few truly independent local newspapers in Orange County, or maybe anywhere these days. You know, most local papers have been gobbled up by chains, and then those chains are gobbled up by other chains, and it's a big feeding chain here, I guess is what it is.
For sure. We're talking with John Earle, who's the publisher of emerging paper, Orange Coast Voice. This is Dan Sung with Subversity here on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of the regents of the University of California nor the management of KUCI. Maybe you could talk more about how you're recruiting writers. I understand you've gotten a lot of submissions from UCI students.
Yeah, I wrote an email to the head of the literary journalism department at UCI. And I guess he must have spread the word because I got some responses there. But most of the responses have simply come from an ad on Craigslist. So I'd only recently even heard of Craigslist. But I guess that shows how
those generations.
So, yeah. So where we got the most responses from. But
what were the literary journalism types like?
I don't know. What do you mean? What were they like?
What was their writing style?
Well, they're being instructed in a form of writing that's that sort of unfolds the news in a story format and longer articles and that kind of thing, and that has a place. And we're looking at some of those, a couple of those writers.
A couple, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That was a leading question, but. How about the, because they cut the journalism program here, they fired all the lecturers who were from the LA Times and wiped them out 10 or 15 years ago or 20 years ago, and then a few years ago they started this literary journalism program.
Yeah, that's sad that they cut that other part out, but we're also looking at, I'll be reading the paper here on campus, I'm sorry, I forgot the name right now. But The New You, that's right. And all other college newspapers, as soon as they start publishing again, we'll be looking for writers there based on just reading their work there.
Oh, good.
We'll call up or write to writers.
The problem is the New You doesn't have there are no journalism students that write for New You, basically. Because they don't teach journalism in the traditional sense.
Well, if there are people here on campus who want to learn journalism skills, then they have a concern about the community, this isn't something to do just to pack your resume or something like that. That's, we're not interested in that.
Right.
You know, the last thing I'm interested in, it's interesting. You know, all the times you've written resumes in your life, and college students, especially, when they get a college writing resumes, it's very interesting that when I look at the resumes, kinds of things that I had been taught to write that I see written in those resumes that tell me something other than what I would have thought that would tell somebody for, not interested in somebody who doesn't show a real interest in journalism for the sake of contributing something to the community. You have to somehow show through your work and what you say that that's what you're interested in. It's not a sales job, or it's not a corporate kind of environment. You're not going to appeal to people who run this paper in the same way you would if you wanted to kiss up to the corporate executive at Walmart or wherever, something or whatever, some other telemarketing firm or something like that. So that's just. Maybe that'll give some people some guidelines there. I don't know.
Are you going to operate out of your home, or how are you going to?
Well, that's a wonderful thing about computer technology. If we would have started this 20 years ago, it would have been much more difficult. But offices are at least for now in cyberspace. So
virtual.
Yeah.
You've from all your experience in the past as a freelance writer and as a reporter, what have you learned from that experience?
What have I learned from that experience?
Yeah.
There's so many things I've learned. You want to narrow that question down a little bit? I don't know what.
You don't want to work for anybody else?
Oh, well, that's one thing I learned. Yeah, okay. Well, that's a good leading question. Okay. Yeah, exactly. I don't want to work for anyone else. And as a journalist, or frankly, in my personal view, in any aspect, but that has to do with my labor organizing experience too, I guess, but just my personality as well. But as far as a journalist, being a journalist, I think I feel like a number of people who have applied to this paper. In fact, when we sent out the advertisement asking for applicants, we said, I forget the exact wording, but something to the effect that, you know, if you're tired of journalism as usual and if you're tired of articles that come to conclusions without facts or leave out facts and, you know, so on, then please apply. So I don't feel like I could do the job I wanted to do as a journalist if I were writing for a mainstream paper. And that's not always true, of course, mm-hmm. because there are certain writers who get to do that. But I think that they're far and few between. And I think you have to really scratch tooth and nail your way to the top of the feeding list, so to speak, to get in that position or be in a rare position to do that. And even then, you know, every time I've ever spoken to reporters who were involved in something like that, there are all kinds of obstacles that they've had to overcome in the mainstream press to be able to do stories. And when they finally do the stories, then there's all this pressure on them, you know, to hold it down, you know, keep the commotion down, so to speak, you know, and toe the line. So there are just tremendous pressures all the time, make it very difficult for reporters in a mainstream environment to do what they want to do.
Would it be advocacy journalism you think of your paper as?
Every paper is advocacy journalism. That is is absolutely ludicrous to say otherwise. The Register is total advocacy. So it's just every paper is. I mean, if you pretend that journalism, good journalism, consists of saying he said and she said, and you have no analysis or background to that, well, you're just ripping off your readers, and what you're advocating is stupidity, among other things, but you're also advocating status quo, really, in some, you know, you don't want to shake the boat, rock the boat. Everything comes from a bias. The question is, how do you deal with that? How do you mitigate for that? Are you honest with your readers? Do you give the facts from the different sides, not just to be fair, you know, as a matter of equal treatment, but for the purpose of allowing people to critically examine an issue better and come hopefully to a better conclusion through that process. That's what democracy and free speech is about. It's not just being fair and letting everyone spout off. It's about being able to examine ideas and having your own ideas challenged. So we want to be honest about how we come to our conclusions, if we come to conclusions. But whatever we report on, we don't want to distort, for example, or slant it in a way that it distorts what the people who we might disagree with have to say. We want to be very, very fair about that. Even if you look on my website, ocorganizer.com, which is definitely opinionated and is to promote organizing, you'll see I've given Jim Gilchrist of the Minutemen, for example, probably more space than any other paper, more space to hang himself with, too. But, I mean, that's his problem. But, I mean, he's given, you know, have no interest whatsoever in distorting what other people believe just to promote or to be dogmatic in promoting our agenda.
Have you thought about a tagline or whatever? Like the New York Times supposedly is all the news that's fit to print.
Maybe all the news that's unfit to print. I don't know. That's because you can look at that different ways.
Right.
But, no, we just want to be thorough and in-depth about the issues that concern people, and we want to show as much as possible the relationship between issues. You know, we'll be talking about labor issues, too.
Right.
We'll be talking about environmental issues. We'll be talking about politics of development. We have a reviewer who's going to review concerts at the New Music Center, at the Performing Arts Center in Costa Mesa. So we'll be looking at cultural things as well. We'll be even looking at some point in the future at sports, but we'll be doing it in a different way. So we're going to be a community paper, but we're going to try to look under the stones and in the nooks and crannies and what have you.
Would there be investigative reporting?
Of course there'll be investigative reporting, or maybe a better way to say it is research reporting. We'll be doing research and just something. You know, it's awfully hard for reporters. I don't blame all the reporters. It's awfully hard for them when you see that in some of the local papers they got one reporter's writing 5 or 6 articles, and or they've got a deadline and they're told, you know, they've got 600 words or whatever. It's very hard for them to do that. And so it kind of, the mainstream journalism tends to attract people who aren't really into journalism for the right reasons. They're in there because it's a job. It's a job, just like a sales job or a marketing job or a job for some corporation or whatever. And these aren't the future Edward R. Murrows or whatever, you know, and we need a lot more of that. And I hope that in our paper, in our small way, that we can encourage the you know, kind of journalists that reflects well on the reasons for having democracy and free speech to begin with, so that they really want to be journalists, not just have another job.
For sure, like OC Weekly has Nick Scow, and he actually is paid to do investigative reporting.
Yeah,
I mean, he can, you know, spend weeks on an article, go travel somewhere,
exactly,
do the research.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, I think some papers do have the space to provide that.
Some do, and but then again, our angle is going to be a little different from the OC Weekly. There'll probably be some overlapping, but we have a little different style there, obviously.
How about the National Writers Union? I've been involved in that. They have good insurance, liability insurance, in case I get sued.
Well, thank you for telling me about that.
And for the writers, I don't know about publishers, but but you have nothing against your writers joining that, right?
No, of course not.
Because it's actually, they do have a sliding scale for people if they work part-time or you know, full-time. Freelance writers or whatever.
Yeah, well, I've made it very clear that, you know, I'm very upfront with writers. You know, this is right now, where we are now, you're not going to be paying much of your rent with what you're going to earn. And most of them are interns. So, but we'll have some part-time paid, like a part-time salary, I guess you would call it. But this is a labor of love right now, and we hope to turn it into something that will make some money for the people participating as well, obviously.
But what if you irk somebody by, you know, writing an article calling them a neo-Nazi and they threaten to sue you? How would you deal with that?
Well, you don't call someone a neo-Nazi unless they are, first of all, and you can back it up. You know, you just use common sense. I've already done that, and so far no one's trying to sue me, you know, and if they want to, go ahead, try it, because the facts are all there. But we're not creating a paper just to go around calling people neo-Nazis. That's just one particular incident with one issue. So we're not here to inflame things, but we're here to give honest coverage and tell what's really going on in the community to the extent that we can in our small paper.
Well, didn't you say you wanted to rock the boat?
Yeah, we want to rock the boat, but we're not doing it just to rock the boat. We're, you know, if there's something that's good that's going on, we will report on that too. You know, we will eventually report on we'll try to report on the things that happen in the community, whatever that is. So we're not there just to rock the boat.
You used to be the editor, I guess, the writer for the Huntington Beach. What's it called?
I was the editor and writer by default for the Huntington Beach News. Well, we did have some other writers, but
yeah,
Huntington Beach News.
So you had a lot of freedom there. How
I had a lot of freedom there, yeah. For a while I did, yeah.
Was that what led you to do this too? I mean, the part of
I learned to really love the idea of writing for a small, quote, small town, unquote, newspaper. You know, that was just a very rewarding experience.
Why did that fold?
I don't know, because I left before it folded.
Oh, yes.
Then it was sold to the former mayor of Huntington Beach, who died, and then now it the name of the paper, namesake, is owned by somebody else, but there's no paper version of it being published now, just something online.
Oh, there is something online.
Yeah, but it's not, it's, just kind of a lightweight kind of, website.
How would you get information from, I know you have lots of contacts in these cities, but do you think they'd be willing to talk to you?
Who?
The police or the immigration authorities, whatever you...
Well, yeah, I think so. I think that I've already spoken to some of them. I think they'd be willing to talk. If they're not, then they're not. You know, there are plenty of ways of getting information. You know, and
do you have to get press passes from? I know in this system we don't need license reporters.
Press passes for what?
To cover events or whatever.
No, I don't think so. I mean, sometimes you need a press pass to help you get you in somewhere, you know, to get a free movie or something. I don't know, but you need a press pass to sometimes to get across maybe a police line or something like that. I don't think we're going to be doing, much crime reporting. This is going to be the crime tabloid that might come in once in a while, but, you know, we're going to be concentrating on more on other issues. If we talk about crime, we'd be doing it more in a with a larger focus, you know, on the social,
well, you can create
legal implications and so on, rather than just somebody got arrested for something. In fact, we're not going to have like a lot of papers have a police blotter, you know, they call it something like that, and they tell about everybody who's been arrested for indecent exposure or whatever, you know, in the community there. And so we're not going to do that. We're going to have a different version of that. That will focus more on corporate issues and corporate crime and all that. They're looking into that.
So that's interesting.
Because everybody's doing the other thing, so we'll concentrate more on other types of crime.
By the people on the top.
Right, exactly.
How about in terms of, I know that, are you going to cover any, are there, I guess there are no court houses there, huh?
But we've become covering court issues. One issue we're covering right now is the lawsuit by Coyo Tezcalapoca against the city for infringement on his First Amendment rights. We'll be covering the prosecution. The district attorney refused to prosecute him, but the city attorney is going to prosecute him.
Oh, really?
So for disrupting a council meeting, which, as I've reported before, is exactly what the mayor did. He actually disrupted the city council meeting. So we'll be definitely reporting on that. I mean, occasionally that will be in the courtroom.
You can make up your own press pass. One time I was covering, a few months ago, I was covering the protests against the cartoons, the forum over the cartoons in Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
And UCI had a big forum, and this UCI cop came up and tried to move me from the overpass or the steps overlooking the area, the student union. And I said, I'm a reporter. And she said, what? And I showed her my KUCI card, which they had printed for me like 20 years ago, or 10 years ago. And
still have your picture from 20 years ago, Dan? Is it?
Oh, yeah. No, actually, it's no photos, so anybody can use it. But I think for courts, you have to, it's a more formal thing if you're trying to record.
Not really.
You can write there, but if you were trying to record or take pictures, you have to get fill out a form.
I've covered court trials before, as you know, and all that.
Right, but for taking
sometimes they try to tell you things that aren't true because they want to intimidate you. Well,
there's this new law that you're supposed to submit it like, you know, days before, but actually they will accept it at the time.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Yeah. I haven't heard about that
in
law.
In the Superior Court.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Regulation, you mean?
I guess.
I don't think there's a law that's been.
Judge's regulation.
Yeah, well, a judge, judge can do what a judge can do in court, you know. So.
I know, for sure. Do you see it expanding? And I mean, right now you're starting small, obviously. And what are your future vision for this?
Well, we vision a biweekly newspaper that'll have lots of pages and be able to cover a lot more than we'll be able to cover in the beginning, and we'll perhaps possibly expand to other cities as well along the coast and maybe throughout Orange County. I mean, there are other models for what we're doing. For example, in the Redondo Beach area, the newspapers there, that there's a lot of competition there, heavy-duty competition between very successful weekly newspapers there. And although I like the biweekly concept better, but we may go weekly someday as well. Let's just see how it goes. But we definitely see ourselves expanding.
Further up the coast, there's Random Lengths. What do you think of that paper?
Well, it's just it's another paper that paper is trying to look at local issues somewhat in the same way we are, by showing the relationship, I think, between local issues and national, state, whatever, international issues. And it has a progressive bent to it, ostensibly. And I think that they're wearing that on their sleeves a little bit more than we will. You know, our coverage will probably appear to be more neutral in a sense than that. I mean, you know, we're going to be less overtly opinionated, but you'll know that we're a progressive newspaper. But we don't want to be dogmatic, and you know, we have to have credibility with our readers, and we have although we have a substantial progressive readership population in these areas, we also have a substantial conservative population there. Now, if you want to convince people that you're credible, you know, you have to take into consideration how they interpret things. So you have to consider who you're writing for. That doesn't mean skew the facts or the mission or anything, but it means that, you know, being able to communicate with people. So, you know, I don't think you can. There's a partial comparison there, but we're going to be. We'll have our own fingerprint.
Do you know about this paper called Turning the Tide?
I've seen that before. Yeah.
It's the Journal of the Anti-Racist Action, ARA. And it's out of Culver City, but it covers kind of regional areas, regional issues. Mm-hmm. And it's gone on for 19 years, so there's hope. You know, even an alternative paper that's very low, poorly funded.
Yeah.
And on the cover, actually, there's a picture of a former guest from KUCI who was an anarchist on the show,
Yeah.
And he's in prison right now, and it's his story about his life, and mm-hmm. it's how he got nabbed, and then he got out of prison, and then they nabbed him again for very, very flimsy reasons.
Yeah.
And now he's in prison in Chino.
Well, I think there's
it's a really good, I mean, I think the style there is quite interesting, and I don't do as much of it on this show as I should. Even on this show, I didn't go into more personal stuff, but he talks about his wife, how he met his wife, how he worked for a mortgage company, got promoted as loan mm-hmm. officer, but he was still doing all this activist stuff outside, mm-hmm. and the cops basically disrupted everything, and so accusing him of all sorts of crazy stuff that he had nothing to do with.
Yeah.
And he served time, he came out, and then they put him back in on some flimsy evidence, it seems. But this was a personal story that I think grabs readers quite a bit, and sometimes I think when you talk politics, it becomes predictable. You know, everybody knows what your stand is. So what else is new?
Right.
What am I learning?
Right. You need to show a personal
growth,
the personal effects,
and
relationship to politics to your personal life, and everything in a sense is politics. But you know, you can talk about it in a boring way, or try to relate it to the human aspect of everything. But I think there's you're talking about the paper surviving. I'm not sure how it's surviving, probably on donations and what have you, but I think there's a lot of hope. We have a lot of support from the small business community already, and we're very supportive of small businesses. You know, I don't know that we'd accept any, probably would not accept any advertising from Walmart, for example, but we certainly will be dependent upon small businesses in the community. If they aren't successful, then we can't be successful in terms of a business. Because people aren't going to give us free handouts to do this paper so that we can pay our own rent, too, and feed our own families.
Right.
So you have to get along with people. That's the end result. That's the bottom line. You have to find common ground with people. There are a lot of small business people out there who don't necessarily agree with everything we say, but we're united on the fact that we want to make the idea that we want to make Costa Mesa or Huntington Beach a better community. A lot of small business people are opposed to what the mayor is doing there. And we're not publishing the paper just to be opposed to the mayor, but that is entering into this because they feel like he's destroying their business and a lot, you know, and dividing the community. And I think Costa Mesa, a city with a population of about 100,000, has had more protests and larger protests probably than any other city of size that I know of. Certainly,
sure.
I mean, you had demonstrations there with you know, like 1,500, 2,000 people back in April.
Yeah,
and it's at Costa Mesa City Hall.
Right.
And hundreds of people sometimes coming, or well over 100 coming to city council meetings. You know, right now, it's kind of died out a little bit because summer people are burned out in the demonstrations and all that. But they're very much still interested, and this has a potential to reoccur at any time. So people are getting, you know, tired of their community being pictured as a, you know, a haven for bigots and all that. Costa Mesa is not a reactionary right-wing community, really. It's actually got a more progressive background to it than what you see now. And it's a very diverse city. There's a lot there, just like in Huntington Beach, that you maybe have to scratch the surface a little bit to see, but it's there.
Right. I think Libby Cohen was a lesbian, and she was elected to the city council about 10 years ago.
Right, right. They had an African-American on the city council. But not just those things, but just the community itself. I mean, there's it's not just Mexican immigrants there or Central American immigrants. There's Japanese. There's other Asian groups and you know, people from Belgium, I know, wherever. I mean, there's all kinds of people there.
Sure.
And so...
Would you focus on police practices also or take a look at that? In addition to the immigration stuff?
Yeah, well, of course we will. Yeah, there's something I'm looking into now. I'm researching right now. There's something they're doing, proposing about assembly, how many people can assemble in certain structures in Costa Mesa. So we'll be looking at things like that and everything. We're not just doing this to cover immigration.
Is that like a gang injunction thing or what? No.
No, it had to do with assembly in a church and other places. So
church.
Yeah, I don't want to talk too much about it because I just, you know, just glanced over the paperwork on it. But, yeah, it looks kind of ominous. And some people emailed me and said, hey, you got to look at this. You know, this looks pretty scary, you know.
Will you sell subscriptions or how would you
handle? We'll sell subscriptions. But, you know, most local newspapers do not survive on subscriptions. They don't really push that very much. This isn't like the old days. Like when we were kids, your local paper was sold the subscriptions. I know of only one local paper that's like that now, and that's a Claremont Courier in Claremont where I grew up. They still sell that paper but it's still the same price that it was when I was 14 years old, and that's 25 cents.
Wow.
So and it's a kind of unique situation there in Claremont there.
Yeah.
And that's the only paper I know of that does that and actually publishes twice a week, the same as it did when I was young. It's the same size that it was then. And although they put out special editions and what have you to get more advertising. But
I think Laguna Beach, there's some papers that are more local that do
there's
sell.
There's some papers that cater to seniors that you buy. There's like Laguna Beach or serving Leisure World and that kind of thing that are sold. But
Laguna Hills,
it's very rare to see a local paper that is sold. I don't even know if the Daily Pilot is sold or not. I don't know if that's free, isn't it? I think that's
it was sold at one point. I mean, we had racks.
Well, when it was a regular daily that covered. All
now it's
national
part of,
issues.
Part of LA Times.
It's owned by the Tribune Company.
Right, it's part of LA Times. Yeah,
LA Times.
Yeah, the whole shebang.
Yeah.
So, do you envision getting a salary out of this?
Well, I hope so. I hope so. Yeah, this is a business. We're doing this is a business. It's a business, but we want to do it in a way that's good for the community. You know, we have to adhere to sound business practices like any other business. And luckily, my partner is more well-versed in business than I am.
That always
so
helps.
He'll help keep the reins, on things so that we survive and prosper.
Are you worried about censorship stuff? And I mean, in terms of, I guess, you know, what are your concerns about the state reacting to stuff you publish?
I'm not concerned about it. I mean, what would they censor?
I don't know.
I don't know. If they try it, we'll resist. Obviously, like I think even mainstream papers would, you know,
and go to jail, huh? Not review our sources.
We'll see what happens.
On that note, I guess we're coming up to the end of our time. This has been interesting conversation with exciting project, giving a community voice to at least two cities in Orange County and maybe further down the line more in Orange County. Talking with John Earl, of alumnus of KUCI, and he used to do this show called The News Gap. And welcome back on
Thank you.
The station.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. This is Dan Sung with Subversity here on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of the Regents of the University of California, nor the management of KUCI. This is Dan Sung signing off. Check the website at kuci.org/tildeDTSANG.